Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. This hour, how early voting is changing our elections and how early voting could be even easier. By the time Election Day arrives, many Americans, including many Minnesotans, have already voted. In fact, 37 states and the District of Columbia have early voting. All states, by the way, permit absentee voting. But voting ahead of Election Day could be even easier and more efficient. We'll talk about that in a minute. And I'd like to hear from you. Have you ever voted early for an election? Are there some ways you think Minnesota could make voting even more accessible? So I want to know about your history with early voting, but I'm also interested in whether you'd put a little imagination into this and think about whether there are ways that states like Minnesota, upper Midwest, throughout the country could make early voting or voting even more accessible. Think about that. Join the discussion. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. And on Twitter, it's at Carrie, K-E-R-R-I, NPR. We're starting this morning with NPR's Mark Zdechlik. He's been doing some pretty interesting reporting on this. Mark, good to have you in the studio.
Good morning, Carrie.
Minnesota often hits the top five in voter turnout on Election Day. What's the landscape look like when you add early voting into that? Do we still hit the high mark?
Well, presumably we'll be in better shape because more and more Minnesotans are embracing this. This is new in Minnesota, Carrie. 4 years ago, 2014, that was the first election that you could early vote absentee without telling them that you were going to be
sick. Was it really only that?
Yeah. Wow. I mean, this is really recent. Prior to that, if you wanted to vote early via absentee ballot, you had to sign something that says, oh, I'm going to be in the hospital getting my hip done, or I'll be in India or something like that. Now it's called no excuse early absentee voting. And people not only can vote without an excuse, but they're being encouraged to vote, not just by the Secretary of State.
Yeah,
and
who's
political
encouraging
officials.
The voters?
The campaigns are out there bagging votes as soon as they can, because once they have a vote in and it's done, it's not only been applied for, the absentee ballot, but it's been turned in and accepted. They can cross you off the list and say, I don't need to persuade this person anymore. I don't need to make sure they got out and voted. So there are a lot of people pushing people to get out and vote early.
So the political junkie kind of raised my ire this morning because he said, I don't believe in early voting. Campaigns change too much, which just blew my mind. My argument on this is not everybody has the time or the possibility to vote on election on one Tuesday on one day. But his point is well taken as well, that the dynamics of the campaign can change and people have already put their vote in. I know they can go back and change it. I don't know how many people do.
Well, that is, there is a relief valve there up until 7 days before the election. You can go in and have your absentee ballot pulled and you get a new one and vote differently. The cutoff 7 days allows the elections officials to get the rolls all in order so that when Election Day comes, they have lists of, you know, who's allowed to vote. And
but
who's
you can
not,
change your vote
thing.
7 days ahead.
Up to 7 days ahead of time.
That said, what about Ken's overall point, which is campaigns are dynamic, things could change, people have already voted?
Well, I would say to that most of the people I talk to in politics think it's a great idea. And most of the people I talk to in life are not likely to make dramatic departures from their political ideology and barring some very dramatic development. I can't see very many Republicans choosing to support a Democrat or vice versa. People are, in my experience, pretty set in their ways on this.
Mark, question. This is just a kind of about the mechanics. Early voting ends the day before Election Day, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Do the periods by which we can vote early change or are they always the same?
I don't know for sure if I'm understanding the question properly, but let me explain it this way.
Okay.
If you vote early in Minnesota, you are voting absentee, no question. We do not have true early voting. That starts 45 days before the election. I think September 21st was the day that you could begin voting early by absentee without an excuse.
In this election? So
yeah.
do we give a standard amount of time for early absentee voting?
Yeah, 45 days now.
That's what I was asking.
Yeah, that's part of the law change that took effect in the 2014 election.
So, but you are emphasizing the fact that we have early absentee voting and not early voting in the true sense of the word. So maybe you better describe what the difference is.
Well, you have to apply for an absentee ballot. You can do that online, or you can go into an elections office and take care of that. In the elections office, you can actually fill out your absentee ballot and turn it in, and they can officially accept it. 7 days before the election, they will begin opening those absentee ballots. That's why you can't call your ballot back, because they're done after that.
Okay.
And they'll begin tabulating them in the voting machines. During that 7 days before election day, you can go vote early in person, and actually you will feed your ballot.
Right.
It's an absentee ballot, though. You'll feed it into the voting machine just as you would on election day, but you're feeding an absentee ballot in.
Got it.
And then on election day, everything changes. If you go to a polling place, there's the register. You'll look for your name on it. You'll sign it. You'll get your official ballot that's not an absentee ballot. And you will fill it out and put it in the machine. There are Minnesotans, including the Secretary of State, Steve Simon, who want to have true early voting in Minnesota.
Right.
So that you could just go in, your name would be on the roster, you'd sign it, no applying for an absentee ballot, and you would vote and put it in. They're pushing for that.
This is something the state legislature would have to pass.
Absolutely.
If we were going to do
yep.
that. Let me grab a couple calls for you here. Mark to Kenny in St. Paul. Hey, Kenny, have you early voted?
Yes, I've early voted already this year, and I have done that a few times now.
So you were aware that you were actually early voting on an absentee ballot, yes?
Yes,
I went
to an election office and did it right there, and it was pretty quick and easy and no lines or anything like that.
You think this could be quicker and easier by some other innovation? Got an idea about that?
Yeah, I had always thought that it was just good to get people signed up for voting as soon as they turn 18, just like you do when you're able to, when you turn 21 and you're able to drink, you should just turn 18 and you're just automatically registered to vote.
Yeah, Mark.
I have a question for you. I don't want to know who you voted for, but when did you early absentee vote, Kenny?
I was about 2 weeks ago.
All right. Here's a question. Joe Mansky, he runs elections in Ramsey County. He's been on our air many, many times, kind of a regional elections expert, says one benefit of voting early is that when you do turn that ballot in and it is officially accepted, the campaigns can have information that Kenny did vote. They don't know who you voted for, but we know Kenny. We've been to his house. He voted. We're pretty sure he voted for us. We'll stop calling Kenny. We'll stop mailing Kenny. We'll stop.
Let's see if that happened.
Yeah,
Kenny, did that happen?
A bit of a relief. Did that work?
I've gotten a few text messages and calls here and there, but not as much as I usually get because I'm usually pretty involved. So they're hitting on me heavily to help them out with campaigns. So,
okay, but they're not trying to get your vote because they know you voted.
Yeah.
Kenny, thanks very much for the call. Good point here about the automatic registration. Mark, we don't do that. In Minnesota, you are not automatically registered to vote when you turn 18 in the state of Minnesota.
You need to register.
Yeah. To the phones here to Kathy in Minneapolis. Hi, Kathy.
Yes, early voting is great, but I have an experience, and I hope the Secretary of State is listening. I volunteered years ago to drive people to the polls to vote, and my person was denied. She was turned away because she had just moved to the area. She hadn't had time to get the address put on her driver's license. Well, they say that another form of ID is to bring a utility bill with your name on it, and then they'll let you vote. Well, so many people live in roommate situations. The utility bill doesn't happen to be in their name. It's
okay,
in another roommate's name.
So, Kathy, I might, because we have a number of people on the line, what's the situation with ID if you have just changed an address, Mark, or you don't have a photo ID? You still have to turn up at the polls? Are all the rules the same when you're early absentee voting?
Essentially, they are. If you apply online for an early absentee ballot, they will do kind of a their diligence to verify that you're eligible to vote.
Right.
The rules are basically the same. Whether you're voting early by absentee or voting in person, you have to be qualified to vote, and you have to make that case to the elections officials that you indeed are eligible to vote.
Last question for you. Do you have an idea of the demographic of voters who are taking most advantage of early voting? Do we know who these early voters are?
I do not. That might be available somewhere. I don't have it. I can tell you that broadly, it's not just happening in Hennepin County or Ramsey County.
Okay.
It's happening in southern Minnesota and in northern Minnesota. I'm looking at statistics from the Secretary of State's office through last Thursday, and we're seeing just huge increases from 2014 to 2018. And they go from county to county, and they're very similar. Overall, they say that the rate of requested absentee ballots is running 170% over 2014. This is through last Thursday.
Yeah.
And the rate of accepted ballots, you know, you apply for one, you fill it out, turn it back in, they decide it's legitimate and accept it. That's up 252%. So we just know that it's happening all over the state. You know, much higher numbers than 4 years ago, last time we had a governor's race on the ballot. And I can't break it down to tell you exactly who's doing it.
Okay, last question on this. Given what you've just said about where the Secretary of State is, maybe some of this depends on what happens with legislative races. Do you sense that there is interest at the Minnesota State Capitol in moving away from the absentee version of this and then just going to plain old early voting?
I don't think the absentee version would ever disappear. I think it would be part of a mix of options.
Okay.
But I think that there absolutely is momentum, certainly among elections officials who have the ears of state lawmakers, to go further and try to make it even more convenient for people to vote. If you're not interested in doing that, it's difficult to make that argument, I think. We want to make it more difficult to vote. And that argument's been rejected in Minnesota. You'll recall the constitutional question, you know, that would have required voter ID.
Right.
That went down.
Right. Yeah. We had a couple calls during our 9 a.m. from deer hunters who are going to be away from their precincts and away from their polling places. So they were happy for the early voting. Mark, thank you. Good to have you here.
Happy to be here, Karen.
Mark Zdechlik with us in studio. He's been covering and doing some reporting on early voting. Turning to two new guests now to talk about what different states are doing and where are some of the innovations around early voting. Kent Kaiser is with us. He's a professor of communications at University of Northwestern St. Paul with experience at the Minnesota Secretary of State's office, and he joins us from St. Paul. And Kent, welcome. It's good to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me on.
Kat Calvin is with us, a lawyer and founder of Spread the Vote, and she's with us from L.A. And Kat, welcome to you. It's good to have you here.
Thanks so much.
Kat, one of the things that I was noting with our conversations this morning about this is that the United States seems to be a patchwork of different laws on early voting, absentee voting. Why isn't there one standard on this? And what difference would it make if there were?
Well, I mean, you know, this is America. We're 50 different countries all within one country, and we all do things in very, very different ways. There are some federal standards. And of course, when we had a full Voting Rights Act, we then had more national sort of standards and regulations that people had to follow. But after the 2013 Supreme Court case, Shelby County v. Holder, when the teeth of the Voting Rights Act were pulled out, it really gave a lot more room for a lot of states to be able to make certain decisions about things like early voting, gerrymandering, voter ID laws, et cetera. But even, you know, before that, it's America. We do things in very different ways in different states. We have different needs in different states. We have different types of populations in different states.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I think to some extent, like most things, we're always going to do things individually, but we do need to bring back some of those protections that we had in the Voting Rights Act so that we can make sure that every state, and particularly states that have a tradition of trying to suppress the vote, are forced to be able to open up and elections to everybody.
Kent, after the 2008 Senate election here, where, as we all recall, there was a long, drawn-out recount that Al Franken ended up winning, you wrote a report for the Center for the American Experiment, which is a conservative think tank here. And you said that Minnesota was no longer a beacon of election integrity, and you made a series of recommendations, and we'll talk about some of that. What I'm curious about, in the big picture, Minnesota has adopted some of the things that you were recommending. Would you say the state is back on track with voting innovation and accessibility?
I think we are largely back on track. And I did want to talk about a little bit about the difference between the absentee voting and the early voting.
Sure.
Because there are pros and cons to both. I did the early voting, or whatever you call it, like 2 years ago myself. In an early voting system, the benefit that we could have as a voter in Minnesota is that you could cast your vote and you'd go early and you would put it into the machine that you would normally see in the polling place on election day. And the beauty of doing that is that if you've made a mistake, that machine will kick your ballot back out at you and you can correct the mistake.
Mm-hmm.
In Minnesota, before we had those electronic machines in all the precincts in the state, we estimated that there would be about 30,000 votes where people had made mistakes, and those just basically got thrown away because the people didn't know they had made a mistake in the hand-counting system or whatever.
I see.
And so it was really a boon to the state to put those machines in all the precincts across the state. So that's a benefit to the early voting. The con to it, and conversely, the benefit to absentee voting,
yep,
is that if you vote absentee and you change your mind, then you can actually cast a replacement ballot. And I know a lot of young people are, you know, really big on and really enthusiastic about early voting, and they don't remember the election where I was working in the Secretary of State's office when a plane crashed with a U.S. senator on board.
Senator Wellstone.
Yes. 10 days before the election.
Yep.
And there were thousands of people who had already cast their absentee ballots, and they had the opportunity to cast a replacement ballot.
Ken,
they would not have that opportunity in the early voting system.
So when I read in this report for the Center for the American Experiment, where you say, let's institute no excuse absentee voting, which we
right
now have,
right,
but not early voting, you don't believe in early voting because you're concerned, again, you've made some kind of error or you've voted and you're not going to learn that in time to get back in there to change your ballot. Is that right?
Well, if you make a mistake and you cast the ballot into the machine in early voting, your name isn't on the ballot, and so there's no way to pull it back and attribute it to you.
You yourself would have to initiate that. Yeah.
So I know it's a close. It's kind of you know, like I say, there's pros and cons, and I'm I think that I can see why a person would be for early voting, but on balance, I kind of like the idea of a person being able to cast a replacement ballot. And many people do that in a normal election.
Okay.
You know, you get a lot more information in the last couple of weeks of
election. There's a lot to talk about here. Let me go back to Kat. Kat, is that a compelling enough reason? Because you heard our reporter saying they are moving to probably early voting just across the board here in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Is it a good enough reason to deny that?
I personally don't think it is, and because of the studies that have come out, and we've actually seen a few more come out just in the last couple of weeks, I'm showing that the percentage of absentee or mail-in ballots that are rejected for people of color, particularly black voters, is just abnormally high in a lot of states. And so you have a lot of people who want to show up and vote in person because they know their vote will be counted. Whereas if you mail in a ballot, there's a really big chance, particularly, you know, studies just came out of Florida and Georgia, that your ballot isn't going to be counted. And so I think, yeah, definitely, there's always an October surprise. There's always, you know, something that happens. But the likelihood of people wanting to change their mind at the last minute, in a lot of cases, is going to be less than the likelihood that maybe their ballot's going to be rejected. And so I think you have to really balance those things. I think maybe if we had the full protections of the Voting Rights Act, so we knew that, you know, everyone's ballots was going to have an equal chance of being counted if they mailed it in, then maybe this would be a valid concern. But at the moment, a lot of people are terrified that their ballot's not going to be counted if they mail it in.
Dan called in to say we're having a vote party to get people to do early voting, and to the phones here to Justin in St. Cloud. Hi, Justin. How does this work for you?
Well, you know, I always, on election day, I get like a million texts from people standing in their ballot box, like,
uh-huh,
who is running for this ward in city council? And I found that early voting allows folks to get more research time, setting up calls and one-to-ones with local candidates that don't get as much media coverage. every ward in St. Cloud right now is being targeted by anti-refugee, anti-Muslim candidates who don't present that forward-facing, but that's their agenda. And I think it allows us to get to know who's running. It allows us to have our ballots with us to not feel so much pressure on election day if we don't know who's running.
Okay.
And in St. Cloud, we've got school board up for grabs, city council, as well as a county commissioner's race in Stearns County District 1. And so personally, I think it's a great way for folks to actually educate themselves underneath a sea of millions of dollars on congressional and statewide level races to actually do the research
okay.
to get to meet the candidates running locally.
I think I've got the essence of it there, Justin. Kent, is that a good reason? You take your time. You're not, set up and under pressure that moment at the polling place. What do you think?
Well, I like his approach in making voting a social activity. You know, studies from the National Association of Secretaries of State show that one of the main reasons that especially young people don't vote is that they don't want to look dumb. They don't want to show up at the polling place.
Interesting.
And not know what to do. So, you know, I see a lot of get out the vote efforts, and I just kind of shake my head, because what we really need is voter education efforts on the nuts and bolts of what to expect when you show up at the polling place. And if you encourage people to make it into a social activity, to go with a group of friends, well, they're more likely to do it because they're all in it together and they can all, you know, kind of learn the ropes together and they don't look dumb. You know what I'm saying?
You know, Kat, I hear this because I was in a different state over the weekend and with a very competitive Senate race and a lot of people on the ballot. And I have to say, I was surprised. People who told me that they vote every election were still trying to figure out who stood for what. I hear Kent's recommendation on voter education. So how would that work, and do enough states do it?
Kent and I are in full agreement here. And this is something that I rail about frequently. I also want to give a shout out to Dan. Voter parties are an excellent idea, and you should definitely do them. Have everyone bring your mail-in ballot. So you're on the right track, dude. It's not something we do at all. And if this is, you know, we as sort of a nation, as voting rights activists, as people, we focus really heavily on voter registration, which is great. You have to register in every state in North Dakota. But most states have between, 70 and high 80% registration. What we don't focus on, one of the many things, is voter education. And Kent's totally right. We have, young people, first-time voters, and just people who, I live in California. Our ballots are always extremely long.
Yes.
We have
a lot
very
of propositions,
confusing
right?
ballot measures. So many. I spend a full Saturday with a bottle of wine trying to figure out what the heck is going on.
Wow.
And I'm a lawyer who works in voting rights. And so it's really confusing. And election guides, for the most part, are written with an assumption of education and of sort of a civic history for people to be able to figure out what's going on, right? They're not really written very simply. I run an organization, Spread the Vote, that gets IDs for people in voter ID states. Very happy, Minnesota, that you guys don't have one. Well done. Actually, Minnesota, incredible voting state. You guys have had the highest voter turnout
yes.
in like 9 years. I love Minnesota for a lot of reasons, particularly the salad bars in the airport, but also your really excellent
well
voter
done.
Turnout.
Yes.
One of the things that we do, we get people IDs, and we realize 77% of the people we work with have never voted before. And so when we talk to them about voting, a lot of them said, yeah, I want to vote, but I don't know what an electronic voting machine is, and every story that you hear on the news is a horror story. I don't know what they're going to ask me when I get there. And I don't know what I'm voting for is in the position. What is the Board of Supervisors? Does anybody know, right? And so we really need to focus, because especially we don't do a lot of basic civics education in schools anymore. We have to help people understand, what are these things saying? What do they mean in plain language in a nonpartisan way?
But how do you do that? I mean, what is the vehicle for that, Kent? Kat and Kent. Kat, you first.
So a few things. So what we did is we actually wrote very simple election guides in each of our states that just break down what is Board of Supervisors, what are they going to ask you when they vote, what are your ADA accessibility rights, which a lot of people don't know. I think it's incumbent upon organizations who are working to get people to the polls, whether it's voter registration orgs, whether it's, orgs that are working on rights to the polls or whatever, that they make sure those people are empowered to vote. But I think it's also really important for state governments and state board of elections to put out very simple explanatory election guides that help people feel and bring, you know, send it with the sample ballot, because the election guide that comes with my sample ballot, nobody understands, right? Send it with the sample ballot, send it in the mail and say, this is very simply and plainly what this election is about.
You know, Ken, I kind of worry that we're preaching to the choir here. If you're listening to this conversation, you probably have voted. Maybe you're not intimidated. How do we reach people who, as I think you alluded to, I don't talk about this and I don't vote because I don't want to feel dumb. How do we reach the people who see this as kind of a frightening experience?
Well, I think you know, those of us who do vote need to think about voting as a social activity and not just go on our own. You know, I served as an election judge for several years after leaving the Secretary of State's office, and what you see is individuals coming in one after the other. And wouldn't it be great if those individuals who already knew what they were doing would grab somebody who didn't know what they were doing and bring them along? And much of what we did when I was working at the Secretary of State was actually put out information on just the mechanics of voting, like what to expect when you show up in the polling place, because that is the biggest barrier. I mean, nobody wants to look foolish. Nobody wants to look like, even I feel a little bit weird when I go into the polling.
I agree.
This thing you do once a year, maybe
you're
twice
right.
a year.
No,
you know,
it's
like,
intimidating.
Right. So I think making it into more of a social activity, you know, think take five of your friends and, you know, take five friends who don't know what they're doing, by the way,
yeah,
and help
good
them
idea.
Through the process, you know?
I mean, there is, I hear you on this. Even as many times as I voted, there's always that, I don't know, that kind of catch in your stomach when they open up their rolls and look to see it. You know, you think, what if I'm not on there? What if it is kind of an intimidating experience, and it shouldn't be. And I guess being more informed as you go in is the best way to handle it. Call here from Brenna in Excelsior. Hey, Brenna. Hi. Thanks for waiting.
Hi.
Hey.
Thanks. I agree with what the gentleman just said, that to get young people out voting, it's a social thing. I have seen so much on my social media feed, mostly from family and friends who go to we go vote because it's fun to go vote on election day, but most people don't. And if you're over, you know, 35, you don't want to go in that line after work or before work. So my cousins had two great ideas. First, my cousin Martha had it all out there about early voting, and it was so funny because her married name is Early, but with two E's, so everybody had all these jokes, and that went around to everybody. And my other cousin, her brother, he's having a concert with some friends, and you're encouraged to go vote before you show up that Friday or Saturday night for the concert. And then, you know, we're going to have a party like before the election. And what I'm going to predict is that my mom and dad and my cousin's mom and dad raised us well by word and deed, because the dad served not only as aldermen or park commissioners, representatives, or chief judge of the Hennepin County Court, and our mothers were working on Humphrey's campaign, the Happy Warrior for mayor.
So they're setting
the
so
and
Brenna.
And so
they're
so
setting
the
examples.
People,
is that what you're saying? Yeah.
So what I'm saying is that we'll go to the voting booth, but we have to get the young people
right
out
on
to vote early.
Agreed with that, Brenna. I've got a million people that want to get in on this. Thank you, Kent. I want to ask you about something that North Carolina's legislature recently did, and we have a different show planned about voter access and voter suppression and those issues. But I think this goes to some of what we've been talking about this hour. North Carolina's legislature recently reduced the number of places where voters can vote early. This is in a state where 60% of voters cast early ballots in 2016. So what I wonder about this is whether the legislature is reacting to calls from North Carolinians who are saying, please close more of those places that we can vote early, or if this is really politically motivated, and what you think about it.
Oh, well, I think it's probably a bad idea, but it's probably neither of those things. My guess is that there are local election officials who would prefer to have fewer places open for that, because it takes staff and resources, and they probably want to put staff and resources elsewhere. It's always, I'll tell you what, there's always that conflict between the state election office and county auditor's offices, because you know, the state election official always wants, you know, the most intensive, you know, staffing and everything. And you can understand the counties have limited resources. And so my guess is that that's probably where it came from. And the county officials do have a lot of sway, a lot of influence with state legislators,
so
from my experience.
You think it's budgetary?
Well, that and staffing. Yeah, so it does come down to budget issues. That's just my guess. I don't know.
Kat, what do you think?
Yeah, and I have to disagree strongly with Kent. North Carolina has been pretty blatantly trying to suppress voting rights in the state for years now. They had a voter ID law that was struck down by the state Supreme Court, where they said that it was just blatantly racist. And the Supreme Court of the United States affirmed that. They had gerrymandering that was struck down by the state Supreme Court, where they said that they had used surgical precision to reduce the power of the vote of Black voters. And that was affirmed. You know, it's no secret that the North Carolina state legislature, which is controlled by the Republican Party, is working as hard as they can to suppress voting rights. They actually have 3 constitutional amendments on the ballot this year that will significantly reduce the power of voters, and that would make voter ID a constitutional amendment, which they have to do because the law was struck down and they know they can't get it past the governor's veto. So, you know, these early voting restrictions that they've put into place are actually just, they're blatantly trying to reduce the number of people who vote. We know around the country that the people who vote early are generally Black voters. And in fact, we know that in North Carolina, 70% of Black voters voted early in 2008 and 2012. And
wow,
they know that,
yeah,
too. And in fact, local boards of election, have said that they actually don't like these standardized statewide hours because it takes away their power to determine what's needed for their community. And so 20% fewer early voting sites around the country, and local boards can no longer decide, oh, we need to have extended hours on these days or whatever. That's been taken away.
Well, so let me go back to you, Kent. I think at the beginning of that answer, when you were saying you thought this was budgetary, you said it's not a good idea for the reasons that Kat has just outlined.
Well, yeah, I think greater access to a polling place is a positive thing. In Minnesota, I mean, we haven't seen those kind of statistics on, you know, people deciding not to vote or you know, by minority percentages and stuff like that at all. But, you know, in Minnesota, we have a rural-urban divide, and in many rural places, the place that you have to go for early voting is quite some distance from one's home. And so that is a concern. I mean, you know, the people who could benefit most from early voting are sometimes the most immobile.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, especially if you're in rural Minnesota, it can be a bit of a trek to get to a county seat or whatever to cast an absentee ballot and in person. So I have those, you know, similar concerns. I mean, maybe different populations, but similar concerns.
Danette says on Twitter, we need to have a day off for voting in order to make it a social event. And then she says, secondly, the city of St. Paul is requiring multi-unit rental buildings to send out voter info. So this is the voter education piece of this. A call from Linda in Rochester. Linda, what you're also asking about, moving the election off of a Tuesday, is that right?
Actually, more to the point of having it on a weekend. Many countries around the world are having it on a Saturday, for example.
Right.
It becomes an automatic social event, a family day, will reduce access to the polling places, stresses, maybe enhance voter education and the whole thing. I think it makes a ton of sense.
Kat, this gets discussed a lot. What's the barrier to moving the election to a time when more people would have access? Or maybe voting early, you know, maybe these are laws that kind of get around that, and that's not such an urgent thing anymore.
Well, yes. Yeah, so, I mean, I think it's a constitutional mandate that it has to be on, you know, first Tuesday of November, whatever it is. And so I think it's unlikely that we're going to change that. And I think but that's why we have all these things set up. So most, if not all, states that have early voting have weekend voting, right? So even North Carolina, Georgia just had a Saturday voting. They have Sunday voting. They have another Saturday voting coming up, as well as 2 weeks, two or 3 weeks throughout the before the election. And most states do. So they are opening it up on Saturdays. This is also where mail-in ballots really come in handy, because then you can do it whenever you want. There are a lot of things that are happening to get around that Tuesday date that we can't do anything about right now, as well as the fact that it should never just be on one day, even if it was a Saturday, even if we had a day off, both of which are fantastic ideas. We can't just, expect every single person in the country to vote on one day. We're going to have all the same problems. So we still need multiple weeks where you can show up and vote. We still need mail-in ballots. That's a big
which
country.
We're really moving toward. I mean,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Ken, I was curious about whether Minnesota. I don't think Minnesota does this. Some states have satellite voting locations where voters can cast an early ballot at like a grocery store. Where voters are congregating and showing up. We don't do that, do we?
We don't do that. We do have, you can go in for your absentee ballot in very localized places, but it's usually the city hall.
It's like the town hall. Yeah.
That's
why
right.
Don't we do that? That seems like a really good idea.
Yeah, again, I haven't heard that idea brought up in the legislature or anything, but again, I suspect it's going to come down to a matter of resources. Staffing, those kinds of issues. I imagine there would be a lot of pushback from local government on that.
And why?
Well, it would cost money.
Staffing, okay.
Yeah, really. I mean, and I've got to tell you, it's easy for us who live in the Twin Cities to, suggest these ideas and put these things on, county governments that have, largesse and have a lot of staff. But I'll tell you, I'm sitting here in Cook County right now, and I think if you went to maybe the Cook County Auditor or the Lake County Auditor, where I'm from originally,
yeah.
I think they might be, a little bit strapped if we said they had to put up a satellite office on the Gunflint Trail or in Isabella or something like that.
Gunflint Trail, what a great idea! If you're out hiking, you can just take a stop. Here's Scott, who says, "I heard Kent say that kids are scared to vote." He says, "In my junior year in high school, we had a mock election in our class with real ballots so that 18, we knew how to vote and what to do. It was a one-day deal." Kat, that sounds like, that comes back to the civics instruction, right? And how you could really prepare brand new voters for this. I don't know why that doesn't happen more often.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I actually have a friend, Elizabeth, in L.A., and she's a high school teacher, and she is very passionate about voting and always takes in sample ballots and makes sure they register as soon as they can and everything, and is awesome. And it is something we need. The fact is ballots are confusing. Electronic voting machines are confusing.
Yeah.
And, we can try to simplify them a little, but it's also we have complicated governments with a lot of positions and a lot of ballot measures. And I don't think that Americans are too dumb to figure out how they work. It's just a matter of explaining, hey, this is how this, how you vote at this ballot, et cetera. And it's absolutely something we should be teaching in every single school.
Can I chime in on this?
Sure, go ahead, Ken.
Yeah, we used to have a very robust program in Minnesota called Kids Voting. It was a private program, and I was on the board of this, and so I just loved it. But it was a program where there would be a kids voting place put up in the polling place, in the regular polling place. And so the idea was that the kids would come along with their parents. And while the parents were voting in their real election, the kids would vote in their kids voting election. And what actually happened was the kids would learn not only the process, but we had increases in adult voter turnout in those precincts where there was kids voting, because there was a pressure on the parents when the kid was like, "But mom, I need to go and vote in the kids' voting election." They would drag along the mom, and then the mom would vote when she maybe wasn't going to, if not for the fact that the kid was hounding her to go. So I just love it. Unfortunately, I think that program has kind of diminished in recent years, but I think it still exists in a few cities in Minnesota. But that's the kind of education that we need, where even at the youngest levels, the kids are coming along to the polling place with the parents
yeah.
and learning what the process is.
Jessica, we just missed her. She just dropped. She says, I think if we brought back civics as a mandatory thing in high school, back then it was mandatory to register to vote. If we brought back that course, I think we would get higher voter turnout for younger voters. Leo says, in Wisconsin, I'm a truck driver. I have early voted for the past 10 years. I live in Washington County. And we have Saturday voting this year, so you just need to check your county office about when they're doing early voting. And then a question here from a listener who's saying, many people work Saturday. It's the Jewish Sabbath. Please clarify the difference between early voting 7 days and absentee in person. Kent, do we need a clarification on that?
Sure. Early voting, in the purest sense, you would go in the weeks preceding the election, you would fill out a ballot, you would put it into the vote counting machine, and that would be it. It's very similar to absentee voting. You can go in person or you can do it through the mail. And same thing, you fill out a ballot. Now, that ballot isn't counted, though, until, like, election day. And so that's why I was saying earlier, if you voted absentee and you changed your mind close to election day, you can actually retract your original ballot and cast a new one.
Right.
But, you know, so that's kind of the difference. They're so similar. It's just, I'm kind of, in fact, you know, I don't feel very passionate about having one or the other. On balance, I think that the advantage of being able to pull your ballot, because, you know, in my experience with the Wellstone plane crash, and I can remember when I was in grad school, we had an election where the Republican candidate for governor was swapped out at the very last minute, and I had voted absentee ballot. I would like to have cast.
Was that the Grunseth thing, Ken?
It was.
Yeah.
It was. Yeah,
oh,
yeah. I'm that old.
Well, no, but I mean, that's historical political lore in the state of Minnesota, right? The last minute shenanigans from that. Kat, I'm curious about whether there are states that are really leading the innovation on this. Are there some states that are doing something you think, boy, if the rest of the country did that, we'd solve a lot of the issues here?
I mean, first of all, whatever you guys are doing in Minnesota, everybody else needs to be doing, because,
something's
again,
working.
You guys have had the highest voter turnout for like 9 years. So keep do more of what you're doing and send all of those things to everyone else. You guys are incredible. There are Washington, Oregon, and Colorado. They just mail a ballot to everyone. Again, there's a voter education piece there that's problematic because, for instance, Oregon mails a ballot pre-stamped to everyone and they still only have 68% voter turnout, right?
Really?
So there are still some issues there. Yeah. Which is surprising, but you're still getting a really confusing ballot in the mail. But it's, you know, it's still better, and particularly, you know, something that Kent is saying about, you know, states that have a lot of rural voters, being able to mail in a pre-stamped ballot is fantastic. So, you know, significantly increasing mail-in ballot options. You know, here in California, you can opt in to get a mail-in ballot, and you just do it once, and then they mail it to you forever. Another thing that is really trying to be pushed, which is just automatic voter registration, right? Which we have in 12 states and the District of Columbia, I believe, in which anytime you interact with a government agency, get a license at the DMV, et cetera, you're automatically registered to vote,
right.
Which is fantastic because, particularly when you're talking about those new young voters, then they're getting registered to vote at a much higher rate. And we are seeing that boost turnout in the states that have it. And AVR is pretty new. It's something that's been really pushed through a lot of states in the last few years, but that's something that really every state should have. You brought up voting in popular locations.
Different places,
Nevada,
yeah.
Yeah, Nevada does a fantastic job of this. You can vote in the mall during early voting, right?
Like, really?
They put polling stations all over where people are going to be. Here in LA, we're about to do something starting in 2020 called election centers, because one of the problems, especially in really big cities where you vote by your house, but you're at work on election day, is it can be a really long commute. You know, try crossing Atlanta in the middle of the day to vote and go all the way back. And so we're building out election centers all over the city where you can vote in any of them. It doesn't have to be at a particular precinct by your house.
Wow.
Yeah, which will significantly reduce commute time. So there are a lot of states that are really working on, you know, either just extending early voting, sending out mail-in ballots, automatic voter registration. There are a lot of innovations happening and a lot of people who and organizations that are really trying to push those through. But honestly, also, we should just all be doing whatever Minnesota is doing.
Rochelle says, though, to what you've just described, satellite voting, very difficult with different geographical ballots. We have three school districts and one precinct where I live, on vacation on the Gunflint Trail. How do I vote for the correct congressperson, school board, city council, et cetera? We need a geographic base. Mm-hmm. Call here from Rod in Polk County. Hi, Rod.
Good morning.
Morning. You said your town decided not to have an election day. What does that mean?
Well, election, my Erskine decided to have mail-in ballots for both the primary and the general election rather than rent the machines to have people come and vote.
All mail-in?
Really? For the primary, I brought my ballot in to the newspaper office because I noticed on there it needed a witness signature.
Mm-hmm.
And the editor of the newspaper didn't even know about that. Now, if there's no witness signature on the mail-in ballot, will that count or will it be validated?
All right. Let's ask Kent about what is this thing about the witness signature, Kent?
Yeah, I suspect it won't count unless there's a witness signature. But I should talk to that issue of mail-in ballots, and it is a big concern because there are some precincts and localities in Minnesota that want to do these all mail-in ballots, and some have done that for various elections. And I find it to be problematic, and it kind of makes me sad to talk about it, but we have heard of quite a few instances where a wife is pressured sometimes by an abusive husband to cast a ballot in a certain way. And so from my perspective, you know, you don't have the privacy of the ballot when you mail them out, and that there should always be the option for someone to be able to go in person and vote. I can't stress that enough that, I mean, mail-in might sound nice and convenient and all that, and send one to everybody's household, and oh, isn't that convenient? But there are some real problems with it.
Well, I mean, I can't even imagine that the incidence of that is statistically high enough that it requires, you know, some kind of witness or let's not just do mail-ins. Kat, do you want to say something?
The witness could actually be the abuser. That's the problem.
Well, Kat, do you have a thought on this?
Obviously that is... It's an incredibly painful issue, and it's something that, you know, we have to understand that when we're looking at voting as well as any other issue that we're looking at in this country, that there are so many unique situations and there are so many different minefields and challenges that we have to, you know, really think about. And this is part of writing really thoughtful, comprehensive legislation that is taking all these things into account, that's, you know, creating protections for people, and that's looking at not just what is, you know, the best for the largest majority of people, but what's really protecting sort of the minority of people as well. And so it is, there are a lot of really serious challenges that we have to think about when we're thinking about how do we create open and fair elections for, you know, a large number of people. This is a huge country with a lot of states and a lot of elections, and it's complicated.
So, Kat, have you early voted, and do you plan on early voting, or do you like to do the, you know, the big event on election day?
Well, I actually voted last Saturday. I'm, you know, partially just because of my job. I'm always working on election day. And so being able to mail in my ballot is great. But also, again, being able to sit down and really think about and look at, you know, the ballot. And you can do that with sample ballots as well. So, you know, for anyone who really likes going in and voting on the day of, I really like sitting there and keeping up, you know, multiple election guides and really just thinking through everything and really figuring out what are these ballot measures actually saying.
It's California after all.
Right, exactly. Yeah. There are billions of them. Also I work in voting rights, so I'm working on election day. So I actually voted a week ago.
Really good to have you on the show. I wish you well on election day with the work. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Kent, have you voted already? Did you say you had? I can't remember.
I haven't, but I intend to go on election day. And by the way, I always insist on using the disability accessible machine, even though I don't necessarily need it,
because why?
For the principle of the thing, it is available to everyone, who needs it, and I like to see how it operates.
Ah.
And I think everybody should have that opportunity to see what miraculous equipment that is. If you're blind, you can use it. If you don't have use of hands or even feet to use a foot pedal, you can use it. It's just remarkable equipment, and you know, I encourage, of course, people with disabilities to use it and get out there, but for everyone to see what a miraculous kind of equipment that is that we have in our state in every single precinct.
Ken, thanks for the time. Good to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me on.
Lots of information for you if you're a voter and you have questions about the process or the issues. You can find a lot of information about it right here at nprnews.org. And we have a lot of shows planned on the big issues before Election Day in 2 weeks.
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet Kerri at KERRINPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.